Hey, it's Chris, the host of We Are Libertarians. I want to give a special shout out to the Now Trending Show and our friend Josh and Lori over there. They provided the $50 prize that we awarded to the person that brought the most friends. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for doing that. And you can get them in any podcatcher, iTunes, Google Play, anywhere that podcasts are downloaded. So check it out.
All right, everybody. We got a great podcast for you tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have the very funny Chris Spangle, Greg Lentz, and of course, from the hit show, The Apprentice, with Donald Trump. Give it up for Rupert, everybody. We are libertarians.
Thanks to Jeff Vibbert. Give another round of applause for Jeff Vibbert.
Yeah.
Filling in adequately for Emily Bewley. Oh, wow, I can't see any of you. This is great. Yeah, I can't see
a single
one of you.
This is professional.
I know, isn't this?
Wow.
It's way too professional for us. Well, I am Chris Spangle. This is Greg Lentz to my left, as always.
Thanks, Rob.
A couple of them out there. At least one or two of them.
If you need an ass kissed, Rob Kendall's your man.
He's very wonderful.
And then, of course, Rupert Bonham from the hit TV show The Apprentice.
Yeah, that Survivor, one of them.
Survivor.
You know, Survivor.
Also ran for governor in 2012.
Yeah. 4 years ago, you and I were spending a lot of time together.
We had just rolled out of the RV in Las Vegas around this time, you know, and then I spent 36 hours in an RV smelling Evan's feet.
I missed the ride back. I heard it was real exciting.
He loves that joke.
Yeah. Does he vape?
Oh, he vapes.
Okay.
He vapes hard.
Did he vape then?
We didn't know what vaping was back then. We smoked.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm not a smoker, and it was 36 hours of...
Breathe that in.
Like hanging out with a divorcee.
Oh, I'm a courteous smoker.
I know, you are.
Yes, I am.
Maya,
now,
not so much.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, 36 hours in an RV with Maya Axton. Can you say hell? We were somewhere near Albuquerque, and the RV that we had for the campaign, the transmission wasn't tuned for Albuquerque in the mountains.
Right.
So we're going up this, and I hear Skrillex bangarang going. It's bangarang, like this loud electronic music. And it's like 4 in the morning, and I am laying down behind Maya, and
I
hear is her scream. Shut up. All I hear is her going, fuck, god damn it, fuck, you motherfucking piece of shit. That was like,
we're
going to die. We're
going
to die. And you're in the back on the bed, and you were thinking we were going to die.
Who was driving?
It's amazing that we didn't see some of the close calls that Maya explained to me after we got there. I'm glad I could sleep through a lot of them.
And you all have to understand, this is when Maya was transitioning without a doctor's help.
Yeah.
And was buying hormones.
Yeah.
Off the internet.
It was kind of an extreme Maya.
Oh, this was angry, bitter, half Jeremiah, half Maya.
Yeah.
What's the other?
The sweetheart housewife Maya that we have today.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. Maya said she would be here, so.
Yeah.
Fuck her.
Maybe. Yeah, well. Oh, well.
You look ridiculous.
I do.
But the hat.
What are you wearing?
I thought I would try to trigger our audience because we talked. It's been a long week.
Right.
It's been a long week. We were both kind of exhausted, and it's only Monday. And we came up with the idea, wall completely triggered. And so I thought I'd try to piss off every audience member here and make America great again. Woo! Attaboy, Rob.
Rob.
Let's just let Rob wallow in his own.
There you go.
He knows Donald Trump.
He's here with Haley, the beautiful Haley. Hi, Haley.
This is so much more fun since he can't respond and you can talk about his girlfriend.
He's just sitting there awkwardly.
Usually you say the very beautiful Haley.
Right.
You're not going to do it now?
No.
Okay.
No, because now it's weird. She's in the room. That's awkward.
Oh, you are a libertarian.
Right. There's girls here. I'm shy. We somehow ended up matching.
Yeah.
A ridiculous piece of clothing and a gray shirt.
The socks.
Did your girlfriend pick that out for you?
You're funny.
We're getting started already.
Are we going to start already?
Yeah, we're already.
Okay.
So we're trying. So listen, I've had a hard day. It's been a long day. You know the life of Chris Spangle. It's very difficult. Right, Christy?
Everybody wants to be your friend. Everybody demands time.
And so I'm just sitting in the green room, relaxing, trying to, you know, center myself, get my chakras in line before the show. This is a very big show. In walks Greg and Yoko.
Yoko, huh?
And then her friend, and they start, it's like two chickens henpecking each other in there.
Well, that's what women do. So, like, libertarians aren't used to it. There's, like, two women in a room, and they, like, catch up and have girl talk.
Right.
Right, so I was trying to acclimate you to that.
It was very nerve-wracking.
I know, you were like, wait a second, if I say something witty, will they like me?
And the answer was no.
Well, it's the socks.
Well, listen, this screams alpha, right? Right, Rob? Yeah.
Well, if you haven't noticed, the Liberty socks are very, very fitting.
Yeah. These are from my lovely girlfriend, Emily. She got me these socks. She apologizes she couldn't make it here. And thanks again to Jeff Vibbert for coming up with 5 minutes just out of his ass.
He's the man. I mean, thank you, Jeff Vibbert. Everybody give a round of applause again to Jeff Vibbert.
Mittens also joins us. I left the Hitler picture that Greg got me last time at home. A lot of new faces in the crowd. You can't see Greg, but almost the entire crowd is different than last time.
Love that.
I know.
No, I don't think that's a good thing.
No,
at all.
That is nobody, a good thing.
Nobody came back a second time, Rupert.
No. They told their friends to come and see what's going on.
Right, and then they didn't come with them.
Paul Elmore and Crystal are here.
That's called trolling. We promised we'd do better next time, but you're all about to witness we won't.
Well, those socks, when you put those on, I actually heard your hymen grow back. It was pretty incredible.
I'm actually a little disappointed that neither one of you put any tie-dye on.
You're right.
A little tie-dye. Chris, I know you at least have a lot left over from the
campaign. Oh, I stole the shit out of some
I know.
Rupert for Governor campaign t-shirts.
I think he sold them on eBay for $1.
No, I no, still wear them
still
all the
them?
Time.
Oh,
yeah,
good,
yeah,
good.
No.
And how many Ethiopians are running around with tie-dye Rupert for Governor shirts right now?
Several dozen. Yeah.
No, they're running around with Rupert made it, the Governor shirts. You know, I had to print up a bunch of those. I thought I was going to win, you know.
Yeah, they're
so
they're,
those are the ones you sent to
did
Ethiopia.
Did he convince you to do that?
If you're wearing a Rupert for Governor t-shirt, come up here. I saw a couple of Christy.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Come and take a look at the different types. So there is the machine type, and then there
yes.
is, this was tie-dyed by Rupert.
Yes.
This is our lovely
we,
model, Christy.
In our campaign,
come and walk
tie-dye
by.
Was
walk by.
Our...
Paul, make sure you do a spin
was
around.
Was our color.
Show the
tie-dye.
Audience the goods. Yeah.
There were a few thousand shirts tie-dyed by my wife and I. After the first 1,000, we swore we were never going to do it again. A couple months went by, and you forget. You know, you forget about the pain of doing something like that. And it ended up my guys in the mentoring program and I doing it.
And Laura.
And Laura.
Is that exploiting cheap labor?
No, that is that is teaching young men and women how to run a campaign on a shoestring, like every libertarian has to.
Interesting.
Look at how the three of them are not looking at the crowd because they're so uncomfortable.
I know. And Paul's
thank
running.
You. Give them a round of applause.
Paul's running for public office.
Love the shirts.
Yeah. Your wife was not happy with you by the end of that campaign.
She was not happy at all.
No.
If I really would have known what I was doing, I wouldn't have started a year and a half out. I wouldn't have. Not thinking that I was going to campaign every day all the time. 6 months into the campaign, and we had the talk with Laura about we still got a year of campaigning, and we go out every day, and yeah. we don't make any money. We spend money, and we're going to have to do it for another year.
Hey, Evan, come up here. Because if we're going to talk about the campaign, we have to have Evan up here. Evan McMahon
Evan
was our campaign manager.
Evan was the greatest campaign manager I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
He
was,
a
the,
real
only, he was the only one, right?
He was wonderful. I know he's here. I don't know if he's going to come up. He might be. He's shy.
He's vaping.
He's yeah, he's outside vaping.
You know, that's kind of sad you can't vape. It's really sad that you can't smoke in your own establishment, but that's another story.
So why did you decide to run for governor?
I, for 20-plus years, had been running our mentoring program showing that we're spending billions of dollars trying to lock our problems up. We're eliminating vocational ed out of our schools. We're spending, in the campaign, I showed we were spending over $6 billion a year on our education. And administration was taking, I said 52%. They said, no, They finally admitted to 48. What do you think they're really taking? Half. $3 billion a year to our administration of our public schools, which is thousands of people. And then the other side, millions of children and teachers that share the other half of that pie. So many times, time after time after time, the dollars that we're spending that are ours are being misspent. And there's Evan, the greatest campaign manager I have ever had in my life right there.
Evan McMahon, ladies and gentlemen.
You only have run once, right? Just one time?
I heard I was being complimented, so I came running
enough.
Back in.
Yeah. And then you quit the party?
There we go.
Right
after.
I've been trying to rebuild what we spent. But, you know, getting our life. Like I teach my kids in my mentoring program, when you've got something to say, stand up and say it. When you know something's not right. The Libertarians were the only party that were standing up for equal rights for all, standing up in the against the DOMA and the HJR6, standing up against being able to show we all have value and believing that it was only us as the Libertarians. We have the same darn election right now. Thank goodness Rex Bell is running. As you know, I mean, we need a solid Libertarian to run against Mike and John.
For those out of state who may not be familiar with Indiana politics, in 2012, Rupert ran against John Gregg, the Democrat, and Mike Pence, the Republican. And those two are on the ballot again against Rex Bell.
But yes. One of them loves gays this time.
Right.
Now he says that.
Now
he
does.
He
loves the gays.
Now he does.
Isn't that weird that he now all of a sudden has flip-flopped to...
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, he's pro-union. He's pro-gay.
Right.
And in 2012, when this was all coming up with, it was the gays and the unions all in the same month.
Right.
And here's the Democrat goes out and says, I'm proud of my history of protecting traditional marriage in Indiana.
He was a Tea Party Democrat.
And we're just like, so we were like, oh, hell no.
Right. Exactly.
Let's do this better.
And the LGBT community, along with the unions in 2012, at the end of the campaign, issued death threats against
what's crazy about that is there were several really prominent people in the Indiana Stonewall Democrats, that's the queer Democrats.
Triggered.
Actually.
He can say that. He's
I
queer.
I can. I'm queer. Only faggots can say that.
Double triggered.
Can I come sit over there?
Yeah.
That was Chris. That wasn't me. I don't talk like that.
But the
leaders of the Indiana Stonewall Democrats actually came up to us at Pride to buy T-shirts, to buy Rupert campaign shirts, because when John Gregg was coming to speak to them, they wanted to wear them as a, you know, blatant screw you to him. And we did probably four or five different LGBT pride things. We Wayne, Lafayette, Indy, Spencer.
Spencer,
we did a
Indiana?
Whole bunch. Yeah, 7 years now.
It's
an amazing event. Yeah, all the churches actually come out and to support it, and it's right there on the town square.
It's one of the biggest gay pride rallies in the state.
And meth capital.
No, it's not.
You know,
told me that.
Amazingly
it's
enough.
It's not the biggest one in the state. Indianapolis is.
One of the biggest.
It's not even close.
It sounds like
the smallest.
All right, in 2012, this is
best.
Your information.
It was the best.
Okay.
Not the biggest.
It's one of the
best,
in the state.
It's the most fabulous.
Yeah.
But people would actually, when Vi Simpson, who I have a close personal family relationship with, when she would drive by in the parades, people would see John Gregg's name and they would boo.
Yeah.
But then when Rupert would drive by, they would cheer, and he was the only politician that would get a cheer. And I don't think it was just because you were somebody who stood up and said, every Hoosier deserves to be treated equally by their state. With respect and dignity. It wasn't just because you stood up and said it. It was because every single person who meets you, who gets to talk to you, knows that it's not BS.
Yeah.
I hated you. When Chris first told me that you were the potential candidate, I was so angry I broke a coffee mug.
And unfortunately, It's still a little bit of that struggle where people just see that reality star. They see someone that they think they know. But being able to show, and that's what I tried to say in the campaign, look at our past, look at all three of our pasts and who has really given back to their community and helped work on some of the biggest problems, the causes of some of the biggest expenditures that we have in our community, and who's just taken from it. Right. Being able to show that the libertarians, all of us, stood up together for every one of us, I'm very proud of that. I like knowing that we were there.
See, what a lot of people don't understand about your campaign was that it was not a campaign run for libertarians.
Right.
And so we took a lot of crap from libertarians.
Well, yes.
Because...
What?
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, the first time that I talked about mass transit,
oh, Jesus,
and I thought
Christ.
Libertarians were going to
You bring that up again, and you're off the podcast.
I'm still getting hate mail over that.
But, you know, we got to be able to get people to work, too. We just got to figure out how to pay for it, yeah. Not be taking our dollars.
It's like 2012 all over again.
Yeah,
are you about
I want
to strangle
state
him?
Right now, I do not support or endorse this idea.
You give me shit about the wall, and you're going to let mass transit go?
No, I didn't, and I still don't. Oh. That's something where we
there
vehemently
are so
disagree.
Many things that I did talk about that would make even my own campaign crazy. But that's you look at the Republicans. You know, I don't know if you.
I don't know why you're
hat.
Doing. I don't know why
you
you're
don't
touching
know if
me.
You noticed the hat. You look at the Democrats. You put 10 of them together in any room. You're not going to get all 10 of them to agree. You're not.
So
we're
not
all going
to
agree.
Be great again,
but we're going to stand together and we're going to agree on the big ones. And
you
we're
know,
not going to spend our dollars. We're not going to create the entitlement programs that just throw our money away. We're not going to fill our prisons with a bunch of little potheads. 42% of our prisons full of pot smokers. I'm sorry. That's crazy. We're not going to turn people that are nonviolent offenders into violent offenders. Because we take that ability away from them to go to work. We're putting people back to work. We're taking care of ourselves. We're bringing things back. You're going to see me standing up a lot more, being a lot more active in the coming months.
And so what we found... What we found is that the bottom 25% of the socioeconomic ladder would come up and go, Rupert, thank you for bringing up issues that no one else is talking about. And what we found from libertarians was... Shut
Fuck
him
you,
up, he's
shut
an embarrassment. Yeah.
You're sounding soft on crime. We got to lock everybody up that breaks. No, we don't. We don't. We got to, the people that are hurting themselves, we don't turn them into career criminals. We give them that ability to take care of themselves. We stop the entitlement programs, create empowerment programs that have an end, that make you do something, get off your couch, out of your house. Even if you need help, we'll help you. You're going to do something to take care of yourself. We have to empower ourselves.
You know, there was a story that I like to tell about the campaign. When people say libertarians aren't serious, we don't take politics serious, we don't actually have a plan to do anything. And I bring up the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
And when we met with Governor Daniels' staff to go over that, there was a thing, basically, the end of November of 2012, the state had to declare what kind of exchange they were going to have, whether it was a state exchange, a hybrid exchange, or just an all-federal exchange.
Right.
And each one of them comes with their own pros and cons and how they affect people in Indiana. And Mitch Daniels, who is always really fair to libertarians, appointed libertarians to commissions and stuff, said, you know, I have to get input from all three candidates so that I can make a decision based off of what they say, because he's ultimately going to be the one that has to decide, but
right.
It's immediately going to affect the next governor. So they invited us to come and meet, but prior to that, we spent like a week solid doing a ton of research on the law and what it was going to mean. And when we went in there, Mike Pence went first the day before.
Right.
Had like an hour-long meeting.
About poor people dying.
Yeah. Had an hour-long meeting.
And how
meeting.
To accelerate yeah. it.
How
decrease,
can we...
Decrease yeah. the surplus population.
That's how you raise the median income, really.
Right. And his plan was just the RNC talking points over and over again about a health exchange, a compact with the states and stuff. Didn't even... consider anything.
No.
We went in and we met with them until they literally, I mean, we were there for hours.
Right.
And we knew more than they did.
Exactly right.
And when we left that, we came up with, you know, I think it was like a 5-page like white paper on what we wanted to do. And it was a hybrid exchange.
Yes.
because it was going to give the most options to Hoosiers while maintaining some control.
And that actually prevented the unfunded mandate going forward for Medicaid, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So John Gregg obviously came out and said that it should be an all-state exchange.
Except gays.
no gays. They can't get it. No, for whatever gay people do with insurance, I can't come up with anything offensive right now. But it was the State House file, I think. Was
the blog?
From the Franklin Franklin College Journalism Program.
Yeah.
They came out and said that the libertarian was the adult in the room. We were the only ones who came up with a reasonable policy, and they expected us to say the same thing that Pence said. And we wanted to. Honest to God, we wanted to, but after looking at everything...
It wouldn't work.
We couldn't do it.
No.
Yeah.
I have to say... When people, there are so many, and we found them out on the campaign trail. Like you say, we weren't running our campaign to the libertarians per se. We were running our campaign to Hoosiers that were libertarian and didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of libertarian values make very, very good sense. We don't want to throw our money away. You know, we don't want to watch people die in the street, but... You know, I do believe also in free choice. If you want to hurt yourself, I'm not going to throw you in jail and call you a criminal for doing it. I'm going to try and help you. But, you know, it's ultimately your choice for yourself. We cannot, as a society, protect everyone from everything all the time. You can't.
Greg.
Well, I mean, I guess it's tough because you do get pigeonholed as a libertarian because most libertarian solutions are the opposite. It's to get rid of this and rely on this absence that, you know, this structure that doesn't exist right now. Right. And so it's tough for you, appealing to Hoosiers, to go out and say, well, instead of sending the criminals to jail, we're going to rehabilitate them because you're going to get hit by the right by saying that you're pro-crime.
First, I don't think somebody hurting themselves is a criminal, but, you know,
no, I agree.
Smoking a plant I don't think is a criminal. What are some of the silly things that we put people in jail for extended periods of time while you've got others beating up others, taking from others, they get a slap on the wrist and a boot out the door? It's crazy. Anyway, sorry for interrupting.
No, you're fine. you're kind of in political no man's land, which was why you were a compelling candidate, because you were Hoosier first, libertarian second. And so your solution, the hybrid exchange, is something where you say, listen, this is an incremental approach. We're accepting the reality. Something has to be done. But that's not something that plays to the libertarian core. That's, in fact, something that outrages them most of the time.
We got hate mail.
Well, and vocation.
Personally delivered by hand. Here, you son of a bitch. Read this.
Was it to you? Or?
I still love
it to
everybody.
Me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do.
They loved him. Whenever he'd be, oh, hey, Rupert. Well, they'd give him a hug whenever they'd see me. You son of a
that's
bitch.
Because, that's because Rupert needed somebody to be the bad guy. He wasn't going to be the bad guy.
Evan, you were a bad guy, and I love you for it. And
but I was a bad guy.
You chaired a lot of our proposals. They really, you are a great campaign manager.
Did you just blame me for those?
I'm Rupert. I can't be the bad guy. Don't yell at me. Yell at
I
this
love
guy.
He vapes. It's all his fault.
Did I tell you he's gay?
A lot of the things that we wrote, I still refer back to. I believe wholeheartedly in what we put out.
When this all started, you know, and I was saying earlier that I was really angry when they told me that you were the potential candidate.
That hairy, scary son of a bitch.
You just gotta meet him. And I thought, I was like, I'm gonna be really, really mean. I was like, that is that, you know, homeless looking buffoon from that show. Are you kidding me?
Oh my God, you wouldn't believe how hard he tried to get me out of the damn tank top tie-dye.
And to shave.
Oh, I did. I started did. Dressing gubernatorial.
It was down here and we got him to like here on the beard. It was amazing.
Even Rob Kendall.
For those of you listening to the podcast, that was a big difference in the hair movements I just made.
We trimmed up a lot.
Yeah. Even Rob Kendall, when I saw him a couple weeks ago when he interviewed me, you know, you just should have shaved the beard and gotten rid of the whole branding that was a multi-million-dollar brand that he was on TV in front of 30 million people. You better get rid of that so he looks more political.
But he looks like a Republican. That'll win.
Yes.
That'll get him.
But what I was saying was, you know, I had this image of you going in. And it didn't take but going to one event with you and seeing that everything that I thought about you was completely wrong. First and foremost, you know, I've been in politics a long time, and I know when somebody's BSing the constituent in front of them. they're waiting for their moment to talk. I do it all the time.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. But when I saw you interacting with people, you weren't waiting for your chance to say your talking point. You were actually listening to the person in front of you, and you actually gave a shit about what they said. But more than that, you gave an intelligent response that that person could understand. And it didn't matter if it was somebody who had a, you know, fourth grade reading level, or if it was a geologist wanting to argue with you about public school funding. You could stand your ground with every single person. When you went on the late Amos Brown's show,
yeah,
and he was questioning you about the Constitution, and you pulled it out of your pocket, and he accused you of that being a prop, and you started quoting the Constitution without looking. I mean, it was just, you know, I don't think people give you enough credit for being as, as amazing and intelligent as you are.
We went to the state fair and talked to thousands of people, and I don't think there was anybody that walked away and didn't feel a personal connection. And I think for I'll speak for Evan, Rupert, what he lacked in ideological purity, he was that blend of applying ideological purity to the situation in that we're in, you know, the politics of today, as well as connecting with the voter where they're at.
You know, the way that you're going to bring more libertarians is relating that to the people that don't know they're libertarian yet, bringing them in and showing them, giving them those libertarian answers of how we do save those dollars, how we do take care of our problems, working on the cause, not the damn symptoms, bringing them in and explaining that. Being able to take that, what I've learned over the last 25 years, and before that, 10 years of working for the government in the institutions and watching how they cared more about the documentation than actually what was going on, until now, where we're finally getting to a point where people are willing to pull back that curtain and see what's going on. We need accountability, and we need some responsibility.
So we'll
our politicians are servants to us, not our employees. So, no, I mean, not our rulers, but our employees.
So let's get into the charity work. Let's say thank you to Evan McMahon for being here. Thank you,
Evan. We love you.
Evan, thanks, buddy.
You're getting a standing ovation from Rob Kendall.
I love that.
Rupert, you tell us a little bit about Rupert's Kids. Rupert Kids,
I would love to.
Rupertskids.org. You can follow all of your shenanigans on Facebook, at Rupert Bonham, Rupertskids.org. What is Rupert's Kids? And
20-plus years being able to show how, like I've said, when I worked 10 years in the institutions and I watched us go in the 80s from worrying about quality of life and worrying about client care to worrying about documentation. In the 90s, in 90, when I left Abilene State School and came to Indianapolis and started living with my adoptive grandparents, realizing that the three strikes and you're out and the zero tolerance was being brought into our schools. I had a young man that had been booted out of school, 14 years old. If a parent did that and wouldn't let his kid go to school, they would be found neglectful. But our public school system was able to do that to our children. All through the 90s, we were doing that. In 91, I incorporated Kids Hope, Kids Helping Other People Exist, and said, we're going to stand up and show. If we eliminate the vocational ed at the same time we're throwing kids out of our school, the ones that aren't making it in education should be guided down that vocational hallway, not guided out the door. We started throwing kids away. I started down my time at Crackers Comedy. Oh, I'm talking about Crackers. At the other people's comedy club and the Alley Cat, where I was bouncing and
you were a bouncer at the Alley Cat.
I was a bouncer at the Alley Cat
in the heyday.
In the early 90s, when half of Broad Ripple was boarded up and people were afraid of Broad Ripple.
Heroin and cocaine Broad Ripple.
Oh,
as opposed to Molly and cocaine Broad Ripple.
Yeah.
Jersey Shore, Broad Ripple.
I talked about being able to start that program that's going to show we got to keep the vocational ed. We got to keep kids in school. If they're not going to stay in school, better give them vocational education. By the 2000s, we brought, as a society, the No Child Left Behind that made it able for us to take a child, and instead of throwing them out of school, we walk them into the detention center. instead of walking him into the principal's office, we walk him into lockup. And we introduce him in how to be a career criminal with 20 guys on this side telling him how to make that illegal living and no one giving a darn on him on that side. We stand up. That's what we do, honestly. We give that third striker, that last stopper, that ability to make a legal living by working them and paying them a minimum wage. You can see all about it on rupertskids.org.
One kind of exploratory question, then we'll go to you, Mr. Lenz. The revered journalist...
That.
Yeah, Greg Lenz.
Scumbag Republican.
Yeah. Can you walk us through...
You're not so bad.
Thanks, man.
Oh, yeah, you're okay.
Can you walk us through the average path of one of your participants? Because, you know, you told me stories about 12-year-olds with $12,000 on light bills.
Joey is a good one, a great example. When he was 18, and I'd been dealing with him off and on throughout his childhood life, but before I even got my hands on him, his mother had put him on the utilities and ran him through the gas, water, and electric and ran up the bill for months in his name, took his name. You know, when they got shut off, the next kid was up. By the time they were 18 and trying to get their own bills, they had insane debt following them. It was outrageous. And the power companies have a monopoly. If you don't pay it, you're not going to get utilities. Some of my kids have been put into foster care, put into the detention centers because no one would take them when their parents are going to jail because they had drugs on them, because they were doing something at the same time taking care. I mean, not that I condone having drugs in the house, but if you're taking care of your children, you're paying your bills, and you're doing okay, you're going to work, and you're keeping it away from your kids, like I say, hurting yourself is not a criminal, it's a cry for help. Taking your children away from you because you smoke pot is disgusting.
And so these kids go out and they have to go into the family business at 14.
Exactly
12.
Right. There's kids in the program that at 8 years old, 10 years old, were shoved through a window or a doggy door and taught to unlock the doors from the inside to let their parents or their older siblings in so they could rob their neighbors.
Are you saying locksmith isn't a trade?
Locksmith is a trade. It's amazing.
And so they get popped for low-level drug offenses, go into the system, then they learn to become better criminals, and then what happens when they get released?
When you're released and you have no education, you have no real sense of self-worth, you've never worked a legal day in your life, you don't have a good address, and you got the scarlet letter of the detention center on your head, you're not getting a job. You're not getting an apartment. You're not getting a lot of things that those of us that don't have those felonies, those charges behind us, take for granted. One thing that I have a lot of bad to say for our current administration, but
one
thing they are talking about is stopping the housing discrimination. In our state constitution, it says punishment should match the crime. A lifetime of punishment does not match a crime of smoking pot, of drunk.
How much pot have you smoked?
A couple? Yeah. See there? He's only had a couple.
This is libertarian. You can share, bro.
He's only had a couple.
Yeah. Hey, you're all good. Yeah.
You're
a great American.
When you can't take care of yourself, when you can't get legal pay, you're going to go to the illegal. When you can only live on Skid Row where it's a $100 bill to move in, and every Friday you better have another $100, or Guido here is going to come kick your door in and throw your shit out in the street.
But, Rupert, don't they have to take personal responsibility? I mean, it's at a certain point you make the choice to commit a crime, right?
When you are taught the family trade, when you see in your neighborhood the only one that has money in their pocket is the drug dealer, the pimps, the smash and grabbers, the fences, the forgers, those are the ones that have money in a lot of our neighborhoods, a lot of our poor neighborhoods, in every one of our neighborhoods that I work in. You see 4 or 5 grown men standing out on the porch in the middle of the day doing nothing but drinking out of a brown paper bag, and you know the kids are inside there. I walk through a gauntlet sometimes dragging kids out of houses getting them away, showing them when you really are that strong one. You're the one that can stand up against the family and friends and say, I don't need that. I can take care of myself. But then you're battling everything you've been taught all your life, how to use the system and take, how to use the people around you and take, how to use the people that are trying to help you and take.
Why do we not see them as human beings?
It's easy to see someone that might look even like me a little bit, that is a little different, that's a little dirtier, a little different.
You smell
turn
wonderful.
Your eyes. Thank you.
He does have a very good natural
Thank
odor.
You. Yeah. Musty.
Being able...
Masculine.
Being able to turn a blind eye. When you see the guys, and I just talked to a young lady standing on the side of the road with her sign saying, help, I'm homeless. She couldn't have been more than 20 years old. A fit young lady that I looked at, gave her one of the Rupert's Kids card and said, there's 100 places that are hiring. It's easy to drive by and not even see those people. It's easy to be that one that says, they don't need any help. They're taking from society. There's very few of us that are willing to show them how you don't have to take.
Which is what's so compelling about your message, because I actually, during my scumbag Republican days in 2012, was working at the Romney Victory Center in Hendricks County.
Oh, my God.
But... yeah, my girlfriend calls him
Mittens. Burning another one, I think.
Wait, when did you get a girlfriend?
Tell them about your charity work.
I can't wait to deport Rob.
I know, he's got to go back.
Little bitty hands.
So you're a Republican.
Yeah. So, but I couldn't get over the number of people that I would talk to that absolutely loved Rupert, and the reason why the most consistent message I heard over and over was your talk about the importance of the vocational training,
right,
as opposed to everybody pursuing everybody. The closest thing to a national religion in the U.S. is higher education.
Right.
So, I mean, for you to champion that and Pence to steal it and incorporate it in had to be a big sense of vindication for you.
Like Evan and I were talking about, there were a lot of things that we put out that both parties took and claimed as theirs. Honestly, I took that as a badge of honor. I took that as good. At least they're listening. You know, for a minute, I believed I could be our governor. After reality finally set in, I was happy that some of the things I said actually stuck.
When did reality set in? Like 7:30 that night on election night?
all the way up until election day, I still had the idea I was going to be our governor.
Lake County. I have a strong contingency in Lake
County. Have you ever seen a grown man's hopes and dreams crushed before your very eyes? Because I have. We were sitting in the RV on election night.
It was a bad day.
Fuck you, Spangle. You said I'd get 10%. Fuck you.
I don't think we're going to win.
There was 1 minute really, really early in the day when we got some false report that I had pulled 22% in one district. I'm like, oh, my God. I might win.
And as a libertarian, that 1 minute, that means a lot.
Oh, it meant the world. It revitalized me to believe. It's got me sweating again. I was going to win.
Oh, boy. He's getting excited.
And reality hit again.
So what was the reason that you spearheaded that? Because that's something that isn't talked about. Bill Clinton talked a lot about that during the recession, and that, like, in the U.S. economy, so there's two kinds of unemployment. There's structural and cyclical. Cyclical is when you're in a recession. Structural is where there's a mismatch in skills. No one was talking about structural until Bill Clinton started it, and so I didn't know if that had something that impacted you or is just something you witnessed.
Well, when we work in the system and you see what's going on every day to day, you see more and more jobs leaving, you see more and more programs being passed that are taking the ability for us to earn a legal living, to work our own jobs, to run our own businesses, to take care of ourselves. One of the things, you know, we were talking a little bit about the guy out there smoking pot. One of the things that I was talking about and the Indiana Farmers Association really started grabbing a hold of was the growing of hemp. We still have ditchweed out there growing wild. Indiana was one of the largest producers. Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, growing hemp. We spend $200 billion a year. That was 4 years ago. Who knows what we spend now, bringing hemp products into the country. What farmer wouldn't want three harvests a year on hemp? Why are we burning corn at $5 an acre that produces more crap for the environment than it's worth, when hemp produces 100 gallons per acre per harvest, 300 gallons an acre?
Why don't we? What is stopping
because
us?
We have a governor that still sees the necessity to create a prohibition still on booze, let alone hemp, a product that just, I mean, if the silly kids, we've got police that will jokingly put people in jail for hemp, knowing that it's a bogus charge. Jokingly, I know it's insane.
Got
you.
You're on candid jail camera.
When we have an establishment and a governor Frank. That looks you in the eye and says, if you want to break the law, I want you to drive around Indiana. I about came out of my seat in the debates when he said that and went over and smacked him.
You think
had you done that, you would have won the election, Rupert. Why didn't you do it?
Oh, my gosh, I would have.
You would have.
You didn't let him hit Pence?
No.
You know, we've got to start bringing some more
mass
common
transit,
sense.
F the NAP, right?
Oh, my gosh.
We passed that line a long time ago.
So, Rupert, how does your charity... I mean, this is one of the topics that I think people... I was having a discussion with the staff earlier. I was converting them before the podcast. Hi, I'm a libertarian. Would you like to talk? The scariest words in the English language.
Have you read Bastiat?
One of the questions was...
Let me give you the test.
How will we fare in a welfare state? How will we take care of those who are less fortunate in a libertarian society?
You know, I've shown for 25 years how you take a person that has just been trained to hold their hand out and teach them how, empower them, show them that they have that energy, that ability to take care of themselves. We've had quadriplegics that only had the head pointer working in our office on when we were in Nora, showing that there is no one out there that can't go to work. Taking young men and women that have never been shown how to make a legal living and raising them, by the time they're 20 or 30 years old, do you really think they're ever going to get it? No, they're going to be for the rest of their lives holding their hand out. We're creating a giant problem. If we start looking at spending our dollars a little more responsibly, not putting half of our budget into just the oversight of the program, but cutting the oversight out, having a few supervisors watching a program work that would empower instead of beat down and punish, educate and train instead of belittle and degrade. Create a system that doesn't class people as expendable. We do deem the bottom 20% of our society as expendable. It always has been that way. It's disgusting. Those are the ones that need us the most. They're the ones that cost the most money, and they're the ones that could actually help us the most, too, because they're an underutilized resource. I work with, in the last 2.5 years, I've gotten zero assistance out of the Shelby County and Marion County is creating our new empowerment program and our reentry program. We've had 19 young men and women through the program. Every one of them were on the path to being a career criminal that would have cost us $40,000 to $50,000 a year in a small community, $70,000 to $80,000 a year in a larger community, Marion County, that deals with more mental health issues, to lock them up per year. And the only thing that gets us is the ability to spend it again next year. I spend $5,000 to $10,000 a year per person empowering you, teaching you how to take care of yourself. I have mentally challenged young men that have been thrown out of the system that are working side by side with others that you'd never guess in a million years they scored a 55 on the IQ test. So I think you get 20 for writing your name.
Blue chips.
Yeah, Neon Bordeaux.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
This test is culturally biased.
I can take almost anyone that has that want. You have to have that want.
Right.
You're always going to have 10, 20% of the population that wants to sit on their butt and take. I'm, you know,
that's
you
almost a Mitt Romney moment. So I wouldn't
you're not
repeat
gonna,
that if you
you're
run
not
again.
Gonna deal with them. You're gonna stop that ability for people to just take and create empowerment programs. If people don't want to help themselves, then they better figure out what to do.
Without a safety net, people end up. It forces them to start.
It's amazing when you raise the bar on a young man that's never had a bar in his life, that's never been expected to do anything. Wherever you set that bar, they're going to strive to hit it. Right. And most of the time they do. Even if they don't get all the way to the bar, they've done something. They're taking care of themselves. They're improving their lives. Quality of life. There are so many programs out there that show when your life is better and you have the baser building blocks of life and you're not struggling day to day, you don't cloud your mind with the booze and the drugs. You don't cloud your mind with the destruction. You empower yourself and your children.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing that I've learned in through all my adventures in therapy is that somebody who has self-worth, somebody who has self-esteem, who is achieving and setting and achieving goals, then there's less self-abuse.
Right.
And so the thing that I have found remarkable in your program is that I always had the mindset of the law and order mindset of you do the crime, then you
right.
pay the time or whatever it is.
Right.
Whatever fairy tale bullcrap that is. And as I've been around your program, I've started to see these guys are the American male is emotionally
stunted,
thank you. And you know, in the program, the lower economic ladders,
right.
it's even worse. And so
right.
they haven't been shown how to express themselves or build self-worth in any kind of meaningful way, and that's what you and Georgette, your social worker, and your mom
right.
do. And you change lives through by giving them that sense of pride, by teaching them how to work, and even teaching them how to do things that they didn't know how to do, like use a fresh idea card or balance a checkbook.
Exactly right.
Because nobody ever showed them how.
Be able to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
The tough part about all this is I think like what you do is the most incredible work ever because it's the only shot at libertarianism ever spreading as an ideology and having solutions as opposed to like the state. The reason why is for so many people, including myself, I pay taxes. I don't need to worry about that. Someone's handling it. It's
right.
the outsourcing of government
or
of guilt. And so when you're doing that, it's a cultural thing too. It's a mindset. You're stemming the tide on a granular level. You're changing one person and breaking that vicious cycle of poverty by being the positive male, role model in their life that is like, hey, kid, this is how you do it.
You know, you hit it exactly on the head. There are so many, and it's not black or white. It's not color as much anymore. It's socioeconomic. And our government is creating that separation as much as anyone. You look at how our budget is spent, where the administration taking half with thousands of people as opposed to the other side that are tens of millions. But when you have a young man or woman growing up with only one parent in the house and that parent has to go to work to try and take care of themselves, or that parent says they have so many children and they're getting a check from each child that they can't go to work, so the kid never sees anyone making a legal living. And then all of a sudden, they start having trouble in school because nobody's cared about them. Because in the first 5 years of life, their nutrition value was nil at best. A Happy Meal is not the best for a two-year-old, but I'm sorry.
Look at me. I look great.
You know, in the first 5 years, if you can't build that mind, just like I say, the mind isn't fully developed until you're in your 20s.
Right.
Why are we deeming an 18-year-old a legal adult and slamming them for something for the rest of their life? That first 5 years is so important in just building the synapses in the brain, building that ability to take care of yourself, building that work ethic, building those social skills. When you have no one to model that against, and you've never been shown anything but pain and sorrow, you've never been told anything but you're a worthless, half-hearted piece of caca,
libertarian.
You start believing it. by your parents, by the system, by everyone around you. And then you do something stupid. You break into the neighbor's house. You do something dumb. You walk down the street smoking a joint. You're drinking a beer. Some of my kids have just been harassed for smoking a cigarette at 12, 14 years old. And on their third or fourth cigarette charge, were taken downtown for an overnight.
Greg and I grew up. We went to Plainfield High School. We were horribly bullied.
Apparently. I had no idea I was bullied until today. Turns out.
So the worst, we were horribly bullied. Oh, it's terrible. But
I just thought that was dominatrix at high school.
Right, yeah, I know.
You know, it's amazing what you can get used to.
One spike paddle, you see them all,
you know,
think it's love.
At the small hamlet of Plainfield, the worst thing that our fellow white kids could do was have premarital sex or smoke a joint.
Heaven forbid.
But when you're in
you
that
could
kind
vote
of
Democrat
system,
too.
Yeah, when you're in that sort of system and you see rape and murder and theft and the destruction of property, a joint is the least of your worries.
You know, every one of my kids are able to tell you 2, 3, 4, 5 people that they know that have been shot in the last few years that have can show you the bullet holes on themselves. You know, when Gary would come in and show you the bullet holes that when he was doing good and in a group of kids in the park and one driving by just shot into the group. That's the life they live.
So let's take... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, this is something that's pretty important to me and something I've looked at a lot. And, like, so we kind of... You touch... The danger of going down this route is that you touch on cultural conservatism and trying to bring back traditional societal roles in a world that is trying to break those down.
Right.
And there's a lot of research. I mean, going back to Daniel Patrick Moynihan in the 60s in the Moynihan Report, saying the best thing you can do for any child to give them a good life is a strict, loving upbringing, but holding them accountable and proving to be a good example. And you would have thought he said the N-word in Congress.
I'm sorry, but, you know, when I brought my daughter to work with me at 2.5 years old and had her on my side swinging a hammer and working, at 4 years old, got her own little Makita 9.2, couldn't really drive a screw, but could take a screw. She could take this desk apart for you in 5 minutes at 4 years old. She's now 17, and we're talking about where she's going to work. We're thinking about Michael's, but she's got that work ethic. It's not even a question.
Yeah. Right.
When you teach someone that work is okay, when you show them, when you have that positive role model in the house going to work every day, that is the best thing that happened to me. I watched my mom and dad both together in the house going to work every day.
And there's the danger, though, because you're a libertarian. And so you believe in self-ownership and not telling other people how to live. And so when you touch on that rail, that rail of, well, we need the nuclear family, and that's where they get the good example, and that's what we can do to end the entitlement welfare state and bring back traditional Judeo-American values and create a great society.
Yes, and the new nuclear family can be one adult and as many children as they can physically take care of and give a loving household to. I don't care how many adults, in a positive relationship, in a lifestyle that they choose that does not hurt others, does not hurt children, does not involve anybody. The government shouldn't be in our bedroom, shouldn't be in our bathroom, shouldn't be in our pocket.
True. But, yeah. The one problem, though, that we run into is we've already created an underclass through dependency. By the creation of a welfare
state. Oh, we've got a million problems out there. I want to start knocking them out. Like I show my wife in your house, in everybody's house out there, you got a list, a honeydew list, a problem list. You start procrastinating. You start half-ass fixing them. You start throwing bullshit money at them that you know isn't going to fix them, and that problem never leaves your list. It gets bigger. You take care of the problem. You take care of the cause of the problem. It goes away. You move to the next one. We could do that in our system, too. I said, just like people have told me forever, you can't change the world. You can't change the system. I started in 91 with that first young man named Jake. I'll remember him always. We've got hundreds and hundreds of families. When you consider all the children that those children have had and the children that we are empowering, I've changed thousands of lives, and I just got started. Every one of us can do the same thing. We can, and we can teach our government how to do it, too, if we stand together.
How do we sell it conveniently, though?
We show that the libertarian does have that ability to see what the problem is. We don't want to just throw our government away. We want to make them accountable. Our founding fathers never in a million years believed that a politician would be a career. It's not a career. It's a right.
It's barely
a
job.
It's an honor. It's a privilege to be a servant to your community and go out there.
All right.
I'm yelling in the mic.
You're all right. You're right.
I get a little crazy.
Just a friendly reminder to try and change.
I wish I was in the debates now. I would go insane.
Just a friendly reminder to try and keep table talk down to a minimum because we can hear every word you're saying and it does distract us during the show here.
Rob Kendall.
You may be wondering why Christy Avery, the fan of We Are Libertarians, Christy's our fan.
Love that!
Yep. Christy, you're going to the national convention, right?
I certainly am.
All right. Good. Well, I have 1,500 printed pieces for you to pass out. And so I just want to...
Still a fan?
They're going to love you.
Yep. So I just wanted to thank you and just say, hey, if you're going to be at the convention, make sure you say hi to Christy and give her some help if you see her.
Please. This is
on Facebook Live, so share it on Facebook. And as a thank you, first we want to thank Jason Doolittle because Jason donated some money to help get the printing done. He also donated a very nice piece of equipment on our Amazon wish list, which is going to make the podcast sound much better. So as a thank you, the trip to Orlando is a long, long ride, right?
I'm flying.
You're flying? Okay,
woo-hoo!
Well, you got a couple of hours, so I wanted to gift you with an autographed copy of my favorite piece of fiction. It is Spanking City Hall by Melissa Hubbard. See, it's autographed by Greg and I. And it's a great work of fiction, autographed by me, and Profiles in Cowardice, autographed by Greg Lenz. So thank you very much. So thank you, Christy Avery. Thank you, Christy.
Thank you, Christy.
And I'm a big fan of Rupert's, too.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm a big fan of yours.
So you're down in Shelbyville. You've moved your program down there. And you're doing yeah. Matt's a Shelbyville person.
Yep.
Now you are down there and you are doing economic redevelopment in a way that costs the taxpayer very little, correct?
Exactly. There are no tax dollars spent at all. We, being able to show that these 19 families, one of the things that we're trying to do is move all to show the donut counties. Marion County is almost a lost cause. They've got so much money that they are probably going to build another prison for $1.8, maybe $2 billion. Jeez. Not talking about the hundreds of millions of dollars they're going to spend it year after year after year running it. The donut counties can't afford that. They, for a few years, asked us to come there and really enticed me to go out to Shelby County. For the last few years, we've been showing how we take young men and women that are costing dollars every day to the community, not only with their housing, but with the crimes that they commit, with the things that they do. And we're taking the properties like every community has, board up, abandoned, burn up properties that are just encouraging the illegal in our communities. I've told many law enforcement back in my day when I was a teenager and struggling for a place to live, I would have kicked the door in and started living there myself. What's to stop people when you have nothing? It's amazing what happens when that starts, though. It brings another bad element into the community. Your house next door, then, who knows what's going on? Maybe now, back in my day, I would use it to go to sleep. Now, God, they're cooking meth in the darn thing. They burn the house down next door to you. You think you don't have problems? Hopefully yours doesn't go. We're spending dollars. Every community out there, every community across the country has abandoned properties that cost, every property costs the community every month. Cleaning up the properties, keeping the grass cut, trying to keep them boarded up, trying to do something with them.
The hidden costs.
The hidden costs. Every community has an overcrowded detention center that in the campaign we had that letter from Pendleton guaranteeing a private sector entity that we would stay at a 95% capacity. The only way that you can guarantee the future like that is if you know you're not going to change the system and you're going to stay at 120% capacity.
Yeah, as we if you walk, if you watch The House I Live In, it kind of talks about all of this and it shows the for-profit prison system, the criminal right. justice system has become a for-profit industry.
People, services should never be a commodity.
Yeah, in the name of privatization, we have turned people's lives into a product that shareholders must be, you know, shareholders need their value. And so
it's really just like a stock options program for elected officials.
Right. That dollar spent in the detention center are our dollars. That's our tax dollars.
So you take the kids in your program, you get the abandoned homes or abandoned commercial
businesses.
Right,
we buy these properties from the city for what the paperwork costs between $250, $500. You know, in Marion County, I was caught up in the land bank where we had to spend thousands and thousands of dollars for properties that went into Reggie's pocket and whoever, who knows, pocket. And we got out of that. Another reason why we're out of Marion County.
To be clear, you did not pay off the land bank guy.
When I came back right. in town and my team looked at me and said, should we be worried? The land bank just got raided. I've stood up. I worked with the land bank for 8 years. I was one of them that... when we were fixing up properties, even before the land bank, I had worked with the auditor's office for 12 years, fixing up properties, putting them back into the community, using young men and women, teaching them how to make a legal living, paying them minimum wage, fixing up these properties, and then putting them back on the path to home ownership with these families so you know that that family will never have to go back to the illegal. That's what we do. In the Marion County, the final straw was when I spent $25,000 on a property that we were selling to a young man for $9,000, and the sale got stopped because the carpet was not affixed correctly to the floor. And then I thought, I swear, I saw the guy hold his hand out. That's Marion County. That's when I thought, it is a disgusting, screwed up system that I cannot... continue to work with. We had worked with the land bank and even before that with the auditor's office. We have never done an illegal deal. We stand up. I have had a lot of people around me check on me and try and involve me in things. Like I tell my kids, when you're doing what's right, you don't have to be an angel. Just don't be a horse's butt. Stand up and show people what you're doing. You'll always be okay, hopefully. In the system, though, that bottom 20% of expendable people, they can't even believe in that. When we take a young man or woman in their teens or 20s and take them out of the system and pay them to make that legal living and get them to the point where they are actually worth it and put them out in the community working, the chances of them going back into the system are cut down to about 20% that they may reoffend. Instead of the 80, 90% that was almost guaranteed of a recidivism. We take that and we show how instead of spending $50,000 a year, they're going to actually pay back to the community. They're going to pay their taxes. They're going to pay sales tax. They're going to pay income tax. They're going to pay property tax because they're going to turn into homeowners. Like we all want in this world to feel like we fit.
Can you talk about some of your successes, some of the guys and in Shelbyville in general?
Young man right now, Chris, here in town that worked some on our campaign 4 years mm-hmm. ago that bought his own mower and his own pickup truck just a couple years ago and is now a private subcontractor for a landscape crew. He's got his own clients and he's got other clients that the company gives him. This is a young man that was fourth generation. He would go to jail to see his father. Guaranteed, he was going to be a career criminal. He now is hiring. He hired Donovan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He hired Jax.
A well-known troublemaker.
Another troublemaker. I taking someone, like I say, that has never had that sense of self-worth, that has always been told they're a worthless piece of shit, and showing them that they actually matter. Cracking that shell and seeing what you have inside, and then growing that person. It's amazing the strength that has came out of that. I've got a family on the path to home ownership that you can do a little bit of research on that was in Time and Newsweek. Oprah Winfrey even went out to Shelby County and interviewed a few of these young men and women that were addicted to drugs, that were in high school, that were on a path, hopefully, to graduate through an insane gauntlet. He still carries that article in his glove box as a badge of honor, showing that he did it. He's made it. He's not on the anklet, the electronic monitoring anymore. He's not in the system anymore. He doesn't report to anyone anymore. He's taking care of himself. And not only that, but he's teaching his 5-year-old and his 2.5-year-old how to go to work. When they were setting their floating floor on their own house, and he had the 3-year-old and the 5-year-old handing him boards and working together, fixing their home. That's where you break cycles. That's where you change the world. That's where the program actually works. And it's not the dollars, it's the time spent.
Yeah, and so when people ask me, what would charity, what would self-sustain? I mean, Rupert's story, what Rupert talks about, you know, it took one person 20 years ago who said, I'm going to make a difference, and I'm just going to put my life towards this effort, and has changed so many lives through those efforts, taking a disadvantaged population that is looked down upon and empowering them and putting them to work and putting that into properties that are looked down upon and not worth anything and finding value in things that other people don't see value in. That is what libertarians believe in.
Right.
That is what we are about. That is the private charity system laid out for you, ladies and gentlemen.
It honestly is. That's how we're going to win. People ask, what does a libertarian believe in charity on the charity side? Because so many people believe that the libertarian would say, screw them, let them die on the street. No, we're not like that. But we also know we cannot create entitlement programs that entitle you to sit there and collect $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year for the rest of your life. You're not going to be that 30-year-old mother with 15 children.
Oh boy.
That is telling the 14-year-old, hell no, you can't have your own check, but you make a baby, you can have theirs. And it starts the next generation every 15 years.
Yeah, and so what we have now is not working.
Right.
And what we have now makes it harder for you to do your work.
Exactly.
And, you know, we have a system where when we give our dollars on April 15th, we don't follow those dollars. If I invest my dollars in you, then I'm invested in your work and I care more about your program and I'm willing to follow your program more. If I give it to the government, then I feel like I've been stolen from.
I show people all the time, especially those that are filing, you know, the long form. We itemize every darn thing. If you don't come talk to me, I'll tell you why you should. Even if you're an hourly employee, I don't care. I'll show you how to itemize everything. 10%. Every one of you guys should be giving 10% away to your favorite charity. It comes off your taxes. You're either giving it to the government or giving it to the charity, honestly. Look at that. Stop giving every penny away to the government. Start making them more accountable. Stand up and let's tell them we want to see where our dollars are spent. You know, in an administration that takes half the budget, count how many people are running those 368 agencies. How many people are on that administrative side? And how many millions are on the program side?
Yeah, and I think if you go back and you listen to episode 144, Amanda's story, you hear how useless do-good organizations like CPS are, how it is a bureaucracy that has no real teeth and yet has a lot of salary to
it. An insane amount of salary. You know, yeah. When you're looking at, program after program after program, no program is ran like a business entity should be. You don't have layer after layer after layer of administration. We need to cut a quarter of our administration out and throw it away. Everyone that's collecting those giant salaries, eliminate all their administrative assistants and make them do their job. We've got failing school corporations, but our administrative, our superintendents that are generating $250,000, $500,000 salaries, but we towed a big flag saying 80-90% of our seniors graduate, 95% of our seniors graduate. Let's talk about how many of our freshmen graduate.
Yeah. Final thoughts, Greg?
No, there's a lot of ideas to unpack in all this, because part of it's creating the right incentives through the tax code. Part of it is transitioning away from spending money towards incarceration to rehabilitation and reentry. Right. Part of it is overcoming a pretty big culture that's used to being able to give a dollar at a person standing on a corner on an interstate rather than helping that person find a job.
Right.
So there's a lot of work to do. I mean, you really are doing, some people may hate this, either Lord or science work, one or the other. But, I mean, you really are. You're one of the champions out there.
I tell people all the time, you don't have to be an angel, just don't be an ass.
Yeah, you're right. But at the same time, what you're doing is hard. It's incredibly hard. It's soul-breaking, I'm sure, a lot of the time.
It's empowering, too. When you see a young man or woman that's helping, empowering their kids, when you see somebody that comes back 2 or 3 years later in their suits, showing off their, I just had it today, showing off his security badge. He's got security clearance. This kid 2 years ago was living in my van.
And that was little Brett Bittner.
It's crazy, honestly. And for everyone out there, if you don't know what charity you should give that 10% to, check out rupertskids.org. There's a big donate button on there.
You're doing awesome work, man.
All right, before we move on to our next segment, we're going to give out a $50 prize to the person that brought the most first-timers. So,
yay!
Was there anybody that brought two friends with them?
Stand if you're a virgin.
Stand up if you brought two friends.
You brought two friends, and you got your two friends.
All right, well, come on up here. Come sit next to me. Harry Price, get the money.
Harry.
Chop.
Underlay.
Tell us your name.
My name's Sarah Potter.
Sarah Potter, it's nice to meet you. I know you from the internet.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, and you're here locally?
Yes.
Well, thank you. Can you tell us where you found your friends at?
My friends were from middle school, over at Paul Hadley Middle School in Mooresville. Nice. So we were on spell bowl team together.
You
I'm
brought middle schoolers to the bar?
Come on up here.
They're not in middle school anymore.
Oh, okay.
All right, this is Harry. Harry.
Hi, Harry.
Presenting the $50 to you. Thank you for bringing your friends.
Thank you.
And that is brought to you by Josh Featherstone and the Now Trending Show. So thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you.
Yes, you may. Thanks. All right, so I got the we need to start wrapping up sign.
Okay.
All right.
We didn't get a chance to talk to little Brett Bittner. He's going to be very mad at me.
Brett.
Come on up here.
Little Brett.
I want Brett to give us a quick preview of what we're going to see this weekend.
We love little Brett.
Hammer of Truth is a news site that did a polling. Yeah, I printed it out. Hammer of Truth is a news site that did some polling about libertarian membership and how often people vote.
This is why everyone that's a delegate's been getting telemarketing calls 24/7,
right?
Correct?
Actually, no.
No?
For instance, Ron Paul has an 81% favorable rating. Gary Johnson, 80%. This is why people hate libertarians. Austin Peterson, a 61%. Nick Sarwark, 63%. John
Who's
McAfee,
Nick Sarwark?
Yeah.
Isn't he the Morgan County chair here in Indiana?
I think so. Aaron, can you help me out? Tell me who Nick Sarwark is again.
So Donald Trump has a 24% approval rating with the National Libertarian Membership.
Excellent.
Among libertarians, that's pretty solid.
Barack Obama has
how many of those are Greg?
16%. Hillary Clinton, 8. So this we actually have a real race for president.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got John McAfee, Gary Johnson, Austin Peterson, and I think Daryl Perry will have a strong showing, too.
I see all four of them.
Don't laugh. I'm serious.
Hey, I see all four of them on the debate stage in Orlando.
And this polling, why don't you go ahead and read. So the polling for the presidential race, who is a favorite amongst those attending, 153.
Was there delegates. A Brett Bittner approval rating?
It was
actually.
I don't see. Actually, he is other at 0.6.
No, no, no,
it
no,
flatlined
no.
harder
He's
than
other.
Prince. Yeah.
Hang on, hang on. I actually do have an approval rating thing here for.
Read the president.
But for president, you know, we got. You want me to go top, best, to worst?
Every, no. Every time I get Brett Bittner on this program, he talks about Brett Bittner.
I didn't say a single thing about me.
All right,
you get it.
Who is number one in the presidential polling?
Well, Gary Johnson, of course, with 60.9%.
Yeah.
Now,
the guy in the Trump hat. Shut
right,
up.
Yeah. Of course. Why would you want competition, Rob? you have Austin Peterson at 16.7, John McAfee at 9.6. Daryl Perry at 8.3.
Wow.
And Mark Allen Feldman from Ohio at 1.9%. Now, all of those, this is a survey that was done of libertarian membership. 1,563 people that were surveyed. They skipped over those that aren't going to be in Orlando, like myself, like Greg.
How dare they?
I know.
Racists.
Right.
So it's 156.
Little Brett's a write-in.
Well, mine is later. It's where they're talking about the new national logo, which had 87% approval, by the
way.
Did
it really?
Yes.
Did they pull hashtag Never Bittner?
Not yet, never but I imagine Bittner. That Region 3 is going to have quite the fun
so,
with hashtag
so
Never
how about just Little Bittner?
Who is your...
Just Little Bittner. Got to put that Little Bittner in there.
Little bit.
How in your educated guess, you've traveled the state campaigning for your race for Region 3 rep. And,
sure.
You know, we are libertarians, strongly encourage all delegates to vote for Little Brett Bittner.
Yes, please do.
How do you think the presidential race is going to shake out this weekend in Orlando?
You know, in all honesty, I think that based on when this was done, it was done before the Weld running mate announcement or concurrent with that. I think it hurts Gary, in all honesty.
Mm-hmm. William Weld is a former governor of Massachusetts, former Republican, socially liberal, fiscally conservative, a governor in the 90s, and yet has some various statements. If you go to wearelibertarians.com, go scroll down on the sidebar to the group. We've posted some articles about William Weld in the group. You can check it out. Or look up your libertarian friends. They all hate the guy.
He hasn't been relevant in so long. Like, I was shocked
years.
There was a backlash about this.
I've never heard. He looks like Howdy Doody grew up.
Yeah.
So you think that Gary has problems this weekend?
Honestly, I do. Taking a look at how things are going to play out, I would say that Gary is probably not going to win it on the first ballot.
Hmm. Whoa!
If I had to say right now, based on what I'm seeing and the sentiment that I'm seeing, especially with regard to his running mate choice, I think it really hurts him to tell the delegates, "Hey, I don't trust you to make the right choice for VP." And by the way, here's this guy that is endorsing a guy who screwed you 2 years ago with John Kasich, who...
But why do you say that about him choosing his running mate? He did that with Judge Gray 4 years ago.
Right, and you saw a huge drop-off from the 70-plus percent that Gary got to the mid-50s that Judge Gray got.
Sure.
And Judge Gray was a known quantity to the LP at the time.
Sure.
Weld is not.
No.
So do you think they punish Gary and Gary gets the nod, but then they don't give him William Weld?
I think it would be very hard for the delegation to give or the delegations to give Gary Weld as a VP.
Who are the other choices?
Well, not only do you have the people who don't win the presidential race, which we see every time people will drop
out,
down.
Though.
Well, McAfee says that he's out if he's not the nominee. I imagine that Austin Peterson will drop down to VP. I imagine that Daryl Perry will do so. I imagine that Mark Feldman will do so. And then there are about a dozen others that are essentially also rans for the presidential nomination, and I see them dropping down to VP as well.
Do you think it's possible that we get a Johnson-Peterson ticket?
I think it's possible, but you also have some very strong VP candidates. You have Alicia Dern.
Yeah.
You have Larry Sharp. You have Will Coley.
But no offense to those folks.
Right.
Nobody's heard of those folks.
Correct.
They have not campaigned. They
they're very
no
nice,
ID.
But they're low energy.
I wouldn't go with that because I actually know several of these people personally, and I had the opportunity to get to know Will Coley last weekend when I was in Lansing for the Libertarian Party of Michigan convention. And I would have to say that there is, you guys may discount the idea that somebody who's running for VP that you've never heard of, but they have a strong following within the party. Alicia Dern does from 4 years ago in working as an attorney for our America Initiative. Larry Sharp, who's relatively new to the spotlight, actually has a really good shot just because of his ability to communicate ideas. And once people get to know who the heck he is, it's going to be something, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I had the fortune of meeting him when I was in D.C. in September of 2014, the very first LNC meeting that we had with the current LNC. And I was blown away by the guy, and he wasn't running for VP at the time. He was just a concerned New York libertarian.
But at the end of the day, Running Mate is a part of your strategy for your campaign.
Yep.
If I were a delegate, I would vote for Weld because that's part of what Johnson wants. Because if Johnson is the nominee at that point, I would vote for William Weld because, you know, it's part. It's vice president for the Libertarian Party.
Sure.
Who cares, right?
You know? I Weld while feeling the Johnson.
Well, okay. But here's the thing.
All right, we gotta wrap up here. They're getting itchy. I didn't know we had to hit a hard 8:30.
Gotcha.
So thank you, Brett Bittner. Win your race, along with a couple other Hoosiers. Sam Goldstein's running for vice chair. Mark Rutherford for chair. And Nick Sarwak looks like he's winning handily in that race, though. So all shout out to Mark. So thank you very much to Brett Bittner.
Thank you, Mr. Brett Bittner.
See you, little Brett. You know, I love it this year. I've got people that have never even considered the Libertarian Party looking at Libertarian Party candidates. But, you know, keep looking at that darn hat. It's amazing what that's doing for the Libertarian Party.
Isn't it amazing?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Rupert, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Give us your closing thoughts.
You know, stand up. Don't ever believe that you can't change the world. It's amazing what you can do. We can all stand together. We're never all going to agree, but we do agree that the path we're on is not the right path. RupertsKids.org, hit that donate button. Let's change the world.
We're out of time, so I'm not going to troll you, but man, do I want to. You're going to be in Orlando, right?
I will. I've always wanted to see Disney World, and I'm going to take this time and do that.
All right. Greg, your final thoughts?
No, you know, something we talked about is the multiculturalism and like the browning of Europe by such a free and open immigration laws. I don't know if you saw, but in Austria, the hard right, the modern equivalent of the Nazi Party, is in a runoff with another right-wing party in Austria right now. So it's kind of at a tipping point where you could see spread like wildfire, people that are going to make Donald Trump look like child's play.
Let me just say that Pinochet. Rupert's mom is a wonderful lady. Rupert's mom obviously produced a wonderful man. Rupert's mom is a Syrian immigrant.
Mm-hmm. She is, 100% Syrian.
Yep.
Her brother and sister were born in Syria. She was born like within months of arriving in the United States. I'm that first generation where all of us in our generation are American. You know, every one of us. There's very few, very, very few people that could say they came from America. The Native American is about it. Maybe some Vikings that are out there, or, you know, that have been around since, but that's about it.
We all came
from somewhere. We're a bunch of mutts. We're a bunch of mutts.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you guys for coming out.
Yes.
Special shout out to my brother and sister and brother-in-law. They actually, for the first time ever, my family came out and supported something I'm doing.
They love you.
It's a tear in my eye.
Worst decision ever.
Make sure you get a picture.
The truth is they came out for Emily. They didn't come out for me, and then Emily couldn't make it tonight. So.
Great
you
troll.
Lied to them.
I didn't lie to them. Thank you all for joining us. You guys have been awesome, and it's so great to see so many new faces. I hope you guys had a good time. I hope that you guys will come out again and bring some friends next time. We want to keep this growing. We're going to do this every month. It's a great outreach opportunity. Bring your friends. Obviously, there's weed in the crowd. So
he didn't share either, so you know he's a libertarian.
Oh, one final. This is for Mr. Tyler Weiss. This is Donald Trump's water. So, you know, we went to the Trump rally a little bit ago, and I was the second to last member of the media in the pit. and I went up on stage and stole Mr. Trump's water. And this is for my good friend Tyler. He said that Donald Trump could never win the nomination, and I told him he was an idiot. All right, thank you for joining us here on We Are Libertarians. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
We Are Libertarians, everybody. Keep it going for them. Leave it up to Spangle to overstay his welcome. He was supposed to be done 5 minutes ago. Be sure to visit rupertskids.org. I want to build a house now after watching him, right? No? Just me? All right, I'll build a house by myself. We Are Libertarians. They do this once a month, so be sure to come back next month. It's thinning. The crowd is thinning. We need more supporters. But We Are Libertarians, be sure to check out the posters. They're $10 back there. If you throw in 15, Spangle will sign it. Greg will sign it. And, yeah. I was expecting applause after the signing thing, so I understand. They're not that exciting. But jeffhibbert.com, check that out. There's a great podcast on there. It's in the top 100, unlike this podcast, this garbage podcast you just watched. So, yeah, check out those posters. Also, they're about to do live karaoke. The live karaoke people are coming in, and this is way better than the podcast you just watched again. Live karaoke killed it. Chris Bowers, he's not here tonight, but oh my God, watching him is amazing. It's better than any live show I've ever seen. So be sure to check that out. There's a live band here. Yeah, posters $10. Again, I'm Jeff Hibbert, jeffhibbert.com.